The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Play loud today. I wonder if you could maybe turn the volume down.
Is that better?
Yeah, a little bit better. Is that how's that? Okay. If anybody knows about these equipment, you can imagine where that's coming from. It'd be nice to know. So, good evening. And this evening I'm going to continue the series of talks on the Four Foundations of Mindfulness, which is a series of exercises that the Buddha taught, a series of practices that was used to develop awareness, to heighten our awareness. And you might ask, why heighten awareness? Why develop awareness? Since all of us are aware already. And all our waking hours we're aware in some fashion or other. And I'll give you an example from my life that will give you one reason why. When I was a Zen student, I would sit in the Zen monasteries, in the Zen temple, meditation hall, and you would sit facing the wall. Everyone's kind of around the perimeters of the hall, facing the wall, and you'd sit very straight in proper posture. And the teachers would sometimes come around, and they would adjust your posture. So in the middle of the meditation session, you'd be sitting there, and you'd feel this gentle hand go on the shoulder. And when you felt that gentle hand touch your shoulder, that meant they probably were going to straighten your back or straighten you up a little bit. And so if I was lost in thought and preoccupation, then when they came and they touched my shoulder, I'd be startled. If I was kind of clearly aware of the present moment, aware of what's happening, not preoccupied, the awareness was strong and clear, and I wasn't lost, if they came and touched my shoulder, it was just like, it was just kind of nice. It was kind of like, I just would receive it. I would be like, kind of like, a grass blade in the wind. It just had a breeze, just gently bend over or somebody touched. It was just kind of like, just very, very nice. It was no startle effect at all. And when awareness is clear and established and we're not preoccupied, then it's kind of like we become more and more a clear channel in which experiences just come and go through us. And they don't hit anything. They don't get blocked by anything. Whereas if we're more preoccupied we are, the more we're attached to something, more we're stubborn or resisting something tightly, the more likely that whatever, that events in the world, experiences in the world, have something to hit inside of us. And it might be much worse than the startle effect that happens, when that happens. So it's kind of like if you are preoccupied with what people think about you, it's really important that people think about you a certain way. And then people come into your view and they say something. They say that, men with green shirts are inadequate. So because I'm preoccupied by what people think about me, that statement kind of hits something inside of me and I get it gets stuck there, get caught, or I pick it up, I get involved, and I get all kind of tense and ready to defend men with green shirts. But if I'm not really particularly concerned about that, but I'm just clear and open and kind of free, then that statement might just travel right through me, like a clear channel, open channel. So the more developed the awareness is, the stronger it becomes, the less preoccupied we are, and the less we'll have any of these things inside operating that are the wall which what people say, what happens in the life, strikes and hits. It's kind of like it goes right through. It has no place to land. And we might still, take care of things responsibly. It isn't like we're just completely aloof. But there's not the startle effect or the resistant effect or the tightening up, just things go right through. So this is one reason why developing awareness is so useful and why it's connected in Buddhism to inner freedom, spiritual freedom. So so one of the ways that this is emphasized or developed in Buddhism is practicing mindfulness and these 13 exercises. And the first six exercises have to do with mindfulness of the body. And this is extremely important maybe the wrong word to use. It's extremely valued in Buddhism, the idea that you would be connected to your body, embodied. There's a story, it's a poem from the very ancient times in Buddhism of a monk at the time of the Buddha who wrote that if he could have one wish, his wish is that everyone in the world got to practice mindfulness of the body. It's so important that that's his one wish, because so much wisdom, so much of the best qualities of human being come out when we're really centered in our body, connected to our body. Or another dramatic story is soon after the Buddha died, a man, I think maybe I said this before, someone came, a man came to Ananda, the Buddha's main attendant, spent 20 years with the Buddha, memorized many of his teachings, and said to Ananda, now that the Buddha is dead, who is your teacher? Or who is your spiritual friend? And Ananda said, now that the Buddha is dead, mindfulness of the body is our teacher, is our spiritual friend. So rather than Buddha did not appoint a successor. And since there was no successor, who's the teacher? And say the body is, the mindfulness of the body is to put the body up, mindfulness of the body up at a very high level, like the great teacher, right, himself. It's so important, this mindfulness of the body, that there's actually a whole discourse, very, very detailed instructions the Buddha gave, called Discourse on Mindfulness of the Body. And in this discourse, one of the emphases is on practicing mindfulness of the body, is to practice in such a way that you develop deep states of calm, and deep states of calm that come along with beautiful experiences of pleasure or delight or joy that saturate, pervade, drip through the body. That's the kind of ancient language they have, saturate and pervade. And I like to think of it as when you sit and get into these deeper states of calm and well-being, that your body feels beautiful. From the inside out, there's a tremendous feeling of beauty, a kind of radiance that happens. And you know, what you look like from the outside, it doesn't really matter whatsoever. When you have this kind of radiance or beauty that kind of was welling up, kind of flowing through you, glowing from the inside out. And this kind of sense of beauty or sense of well-being that can come through developing meditation practice is one of the important reference points for practice in the ancient Buddhist tradition. So the body was greatly valued. And appreciating the body, enjoying it, being present in the body, and so that inside out, the body felt really good, is part of the whole enterprise here. And so in this 13 exercises that we're covering over these weeks, the fourth and fifth one have to do with beginning to look at the body in a deeper way. The development of this process of becoming aware starts with movement. The things that move, when we move, that's kind of relatively coarse activity. And so we can kind of track the movements better. So one of the movements is the movements of breathing, the movements of our posture, we talked about last week. And the simple movements of lifting your hand, putting on your clothes, sitting, you know, the different kind of basic movements we do. to know and you're aware and use that as a place to develop awareness. To go deeper, we sit still. And as we sit still, we begin looking into our body and seeing it in deeper ways. And the first way the Buddha talked about is conceptual, a little more conceptual that we use. And the second is more non-conceptual. And so we go again from a grosser, a coarser state of mind to a more refined or quieter state of mind. To be living in the world of concepts takes brain power, takes brain energy and activity of the brain. To go to drop the conceptual level and drop into what's called the sensory level, sensation level, it requires less activity of the brain, and the mind can get calmer still. But on the way there, the way that these exercises are described, the first one is conceptual, and it's done this way. I'll read it to you. It's called mindfulness of the anatomical parts of our body, and as with all this stuff, it's very interesting to see that in so many ways, when the Buddha gave instructions, he did it sequentially from that which is coarser to more subtle or more refined, or more inner, or more inward, from outside to the inside. And here, you'll look there. There's three different kind of layers going inward. The first is becoming aware of the body from the outside, what you can see from the outside. And then to become aware of the organs. And then to become aware of the fluids that flow inside the organs and all the way around. So kind of this progressive step inward to deeper kind of ideas. And it's, you know, somewhat conceptual to have these different parts. You think about them. Some of them, you know, some of us probably have never actually seen some parts of our inner body. You know, if maybe you've been to an anatomy lab and maybe you've seen some of it or seen it in an animal. But to imagine, you know, where these parts are and to see them is part of the exercise. So it's kind of using your concepts, using your imagination to evoke and see different parts of your body. So this is how the instructions are given. A person reviews this very body up from the soles of the feet down from the top of the hair, bounded by skin, as full of many kinds of, here the word is impurity or uncleanliness. Thus, in this body, there are head hairs, body hairs, nails, teeth, skin, flesh, sinews, bones, bone marrow, kidney, heart, liver, diaphragm, spleen, lungs, intestines, mesentery. I don't know what mesentery is, so I can't imagine it. Contents of the stomach, feces, bile, phlegm, pus, blood, sweat, fat, tears, grease, spittle, snot, oil of the joints, and urine. So they usually say there's 32 of these parts to pay attention to. And in Thailand, in some of the monastic traditions, this is the first meditation practice that are given to new monks and nuns. And they're taught to memorize this list and then to go through that list, kind of like a little bit like a memorization thing. You repeat and to yourself over and over again. And you get pretty focused. You know, you really remember all those parts. And to recite it to yourself over and over again is like a mantra or like a little liturgy that you repeat. But you're not supposed to do it just like a mantra or a liturgy. You're supposed to actually go through them and then focus your attention or your imagination on that part of your body. And it's possible to get very concentrated. If you really get into it, your mind's not going to wander. Your mind's not going to be concerned with how are you going to get oil and your oil change in your car. You know, or you know, what happened at work, or what you're doing tomorrow, or whatever your distracted mind does. You're kind of honing the mind to be really present for something that you're concentrating on. And it's, you know, it's using concepts and ideas to do it, to get concentrated. And it's using concepts that have to do with one's own body. So we're bringing the attention here and coming inward and really imagining or connected here. One of the functions this has, this kind of focus, is to begin breaking the habit, the strong habit we have, of taking ourselves as a whole unit. You know, me, myself, and mine. And to think, I think in terms of I. But rather than I, we think we're made up of these different parts. And as we realize we're made up of different parts, it tends to kind of loosen up the hard grip we might have of thinking only in terms of me, myself, and mine. And this is one of the enterprises of Buddhism, is to try to loosen up the grip of those strong attachments to self. The old texts talk about this exercise as an exercise that helps free us from conceit. And it does also, the ancient text talks about this exercise as an exercise that also is supposed to help certain people who need it, not those who don't need it, to help them be free of over preoccupation with sensual lust. And the idea is you're supposed to do the same. Imagine all these parts of the person you're attracted to. And so it's not like a policy. You're supposed to always be thinking people about that way. But it does happen from time to time that someone, I'm sure none of you, but it happens from time to time that that people sit down to meditate, and it's hard to get focused in meditation because they have thoughts about sexual attraction, sexual interest, sexual fantasies. And I think actually not a few people, quite a few people will sooner or later succumb to sexual fantasies and sit there. And as a teacher, I've heard some, you know, wonderful stories of people. I didn't hear the details, but people will come and tell me, you know, that, you know, I can't get rid of these. I can't stop. I keep going there. So the people who find they're too caught up in thoughts of sex and sexuality, then this exercise is given. You know, imagine him, imagine her, you know, go through the list. Oils of the joints, grease, spittle, urine. So maybe it works. And then it has an interesting simile to describe this exercise. Just as though there were a bag with an opening at both ends full of many sorts of grain, such as hill rice, red rice, beans, peas, millet, and white rice, and a person with good eyes were to open it and review it thus. This is hill rice, this is red rice, this is beans, these are peas, this is millet, this is white rice. So too, a person reviews one's body for all these different body parts that was listed. And I love this analogy. You know, the bag with opening on both ends is kind of like us. We're open in both ends, the mouth and the other end, and food goes through. So I think that's supposed to be kind of a simile for the human body. And if you open the bag at one end and look at those beans, a lot of these beans and grains are quite beautiful. You know, if you've gone to some kind of open market where the grains are being sold in baskets and beautiful colors, you know, and beautiful to see the shapes and the smoothness and all these things. It's kind of, I think it's quite nice. So the idea of looking at this bag, I think it's like jewels, kind of special to kind of look in, but you clearly see the distinction between different parts. The bag is closed, it's just a bag. But if you open it, you see it's a bag of all these individually different things. So in the same way, one sees these different parts of oneself. And it gets the mind focused. It gets the mind oriented towards oneself in different ways than how we usually think about ourselves. The strong habits begin to weaken. The strong habits of conceit, the strong habits of seeing us, you know, as solitary way, single way. So, kind of matter of fact, just so I think I'll go through the list again. And there's a wonderful colleague, the Vipassana teacher in Santa Cruz named Bob Stahl, who for years has been teaching mindfulness-based stress reduction in El Camino Hospital in Mountain View. Some of you probably here took his MBSR class. Is that true? Anybody here for taking his class? Yeah? Thank you. Thank you. So, in his kind of other guise, he's a Buddhist teacher. And when he's a Buddhist teacher, one of his favorite practices he likes to teach is the 32 parts of the body. He's done this practice a lot for himself, and then he teaches people. And he does like, I don't know how long it is, maybe it's a 32-week course or something. And he goes through each part, and the people learn to meditate on it and get focused. Then somewhere about two-thirds of the way through the course, he takes people to the anatomy lab at the local college, and they get to look at, you know, what it looks like under the skin, and that to help them in their practice of 32 parts of the body. So here it is again. A person reviews this same body up from the soles of the feet and down from the top of the hair, bounded by skin, as full of many kinds of impurity. Thus, in this body, there are head hairs, body hairs, nails, teeth, skin, flesh, sinews, bones, bone marrow, kidneys, heart, liver, diaphragm, spleen, lungs, intestines, mesentery, contents of the stomach, feces, bile, phlegm, pus, blood, sweat, fat, tears, grease, spittle, snot, oil of the joints, and urine. You realize you had all those stuff in there? And so that's doing this repeatedly as a practice. Then one of the byproducts or one of the results of this is that your ability to be aware in this clear, open way, be really present without being any preoccupation or agitation kind of mucking up your awareness, becomes stronger. Awareness becomes stronger. To develop the practice further and deeper, to develop deeper states of calm and greater states of clarity, you want to then drop the conceptual level, these ideas of hair and teeth and all that, because those are concepts we have. And rather than focusing on the concepts, we want to switch to focusing on the sensation level. Of what we can feel, we don't really need concepts to feel it. Maybe we need concepts to understand what we're feeling, but the feelings themselves directly are not conceptual. So to give you an example, to lead you in an example, I'd like to do a very simple exercise with you of practicing mindfulness of your hand. And so what I'd like to ask you to do is, as you are, just close your eyes. This is not a long thing. Just close your eyes and bring your attention into your right hand. And begin feeling the sensations that are in your hand there. The sensations in the palm of your hand. The top of the hand. The fingers. And you might be aware of pulsing, tingling, vibration, pressure, if your hand is touching something, the sensations of contact against maybe your leg, your thigh, the other hand. You might feel temperature, warmth, coolness. A very gentle breeze. Now, as you feel the sensations in and of themselves, in a certain kind of way, there is no hand. They're just, in the world of sensations, they're just sensations, surrounded by space, maybe with no clear boundary between the sensations and the space around it. And it's possible to feel the sensations of the hand without actively involving yourself in thoughts, this is a hand. Just sensations. And then you can open your eyes. And now you can look at your hand. And you can think about your right hand, or both hands. And you might think about, you know, where these hands have been over your lifetime and what they've done for you. And you might think about your ideas about your hand. And some people don't like their hands. Some people like their hands. The fingers are too short, too long, too fat. The fingernails, they're not behaving properly. And we get into a world of ideas and concepts of what it means to have a hand and what it's done. And someone the other day told me that they spent some time looking at their hand and they felt so grateful. And they felt, I never thanked my hands for, they've been along all along for the ride and they've been doing so much. So then we get involved in concepts and memory and histories and comparing hands to ideal hands and all this stuff. And it gets complicated. And some of you, it's possible some of you suffer because of your hands. You know, the fingers are too short or too long or this or that. And it's just not the, you know, what fashion model hands should really look like or something. You know, we have this idea. Once we get into the world of concepts and ideas, it can get complicated. But if we stay with the eyes closed and don't think of the ideas, but just feel the sensations themselves of the hand, chances are most of those sensations were independent of the concepts and ideas we have and the judgments we might have about the hand or the gratitude we have. It's just sensations. So in this way, if we rest attention in the sensations of the hand, the mind can get quiet. If we look at the hand and start thinking about it and what the hand has done and what we think about hands and how my hand compares to my neighbor's hands, and then it gets complicated and the mind can easily start spinning out and thinking and getting involved and doing all kinds of things. So if you want the mind to get quiet, then you want to be able to put to rest for a short while that conceptual side and just stay with the direct sensations. And the way that this exercise in direct sensations is described, it's exercise in the what's called the four elements. And in the ancient world of India, they had the idea that the world is made up of four primary elements: earth, water, fire, and air. Or sometimes it's called wind. Let's see, how does it say it here? Here they call it air. Earth, water, fire, and air. And when it's applied to our body, it refers to a way of classifying the sensations of our body. That the earth elements of our body are felt as sensations of hardness and softness, solidity. The water element is fluidity. So if you like feel the spit in your mouth and you take your tongue and wash it around, you feel that liquid. That's the water element that we feel. If you tear up by some reason, you feel that water element in your eyes. The feeling of wetness. And then fire element is temperature. And so hot and cold. Anytime you feel hot and cold or anything in between, that's called the fire element. So sensations of temperature. And the fourth one is air element, is any sensation of movement that you have in the body. So, you know, since it's air, the obvious one would be gas. You know, you feel the movement of gas or something in your body. But any movement at all. So they say, even though we think of it as liquid, if you feel the movement of the blood going through, that would be classified as the air element. Exactly how these sensations fit into these fourfold classification is not that important. What it's trying to do is drop into what the sensory level of experience, this sensation level of experience, and feel it there. And in fact, the way that I was trained in this Vipassana practice that we do, trained in Burma and Thailand, was primarily a meditation on these four elements, or primarily a meditation on the staying present for the sensations in and of themselves in the body. Nominally, it looks like they were teaching us breath meditation, because we were told to pay attention to the rising and falling of the belly as we were breathing. And I did that in my Zen training, and that was called, you know, breath meditation. But in fact, we're really focusing on breathing, but rather using the movement of the belly as a way of tuning in to these four elements that were there. The movement that has happened, the pressure, the hardness, the softness, the temperature, all these different things that went on there, and getting more and more attuned to the simple sensation level. Now, some of you know that there's much more pleasure in life sometimes, a sensual pleasure, if you're present for it, right? You know, you go and buy a very nice ice cream or chocolate or something, but then if you're talking with a friend and they tell you a scintillating, fascinating story about something, and you're just like eating, you know, like, well, not really paying attention to eating, and you're just so interested in the story, and then you stop, the story ends, and you look at your bag or your cone of ice cream or your bag of chocolate, and it's empty, it's gone, and so, I didn't taste it. I just like was so preoccupied by the story that I just ate without really. Versus, you know, you take the chocolate and you close your eyes and you put it in your mouth and you let it melt there. And just like that oozes around your mouth, you feel so sensual and rich and the sweetness and the chocolateness. And it's like, you know, you could just like linger there for a long time. And you're so glad when you swallow it, the flavor just lingers there. And you don't want anyone to disturb it for a while. Or, you know, if a friend of yours comes along to offer you a massage, you know, rub your shoulders or something, and you're really busy doing a crossword puzzle, and, you know, you're thinking about, you know, doing your puzzle, and you're really getting close to finishing it all, and you don't have much time, so you can't really focus on anything else, you know, and they're massaging your shoulders, and it's very different than, like, just not thinking about anything. And just really being present for it. So this sensory level of attention is deeper, more primary, and more intimate, more connected to ourselves than anything that we can be involved in the conceptual level. And so as this development of mindfulness continues, the idea is to move to this more subtle area and develop concentration, develop mindfulness on the physical sensations of the body. And this is one of the great things to do, because as we become more attuned to our body, more aware of what goes on in the body, the information that is in the body becomes available to our intelligence, to how we understand ourselves, understand the world around us. There's a tremendous amount of information in the body about how the world affects us, what's going on inside of us, our psychological states, our emotional states, our impulses, our attitudes, our intuitions, is processed through our body. And so to learn how to be centered in the body does a number of things. It helps us to be not so caught up in our head and all the ideas we have in our head, which for some people is a labyrinth, but a maze that they'll never get out of if they only stay in their head. So it gets us out of our head, and then it helps us become aware of a much richer aspects of our life. Our emotional life becomes richer and more free when we're centered in our body. We have access to much more information, and so we can be wiser about what goes on. We can respond more effectively to the world and know how to take care of ourselves much better. And awareness doesn't only remain thoughtfulness, thinking. Awareness doesn't only stay something that's in the head, closely connected to concepts and ideas, but awareness becomes something that kind of glows throughout the body. Or, you know, it's not located in the head. It's not. When I was probably before I started Buddhism, if someone had asked me, "Where is awareness for you?" I probably would have pointed to my head, my brain. After I practiced for some time, if someone had asked me where awareness is, I would have pointed to my chest. And then now, if someone asked me where awareness is, I don't point to anything. I would just open my eyes really wide and kind of make a big arc and open up. And it's here. It's everything. Awareness is not located anywhere anymore, but it's all-inclusive. And part of the reason for that I can feel that, is because of it's supported by this more expanded or more richer or more wider capacity for awareness that is available if we're centered in our body, connected to our body, that is not available if we are, you know, the primary way we're processing the world is through our thoughts and ideas and stories that we have. So this particular exercise, the exercise on the elements, is really very deeply connected to the classic Vipassana tradition, the classic mindfulness tradition. It's kind of like one of the core practices to do that. It's more core than, in some ways, than just mindfulness of breathing. And beginning to kind of, things begin to open up sometimes much more effectively for people in meditation practice when they really learn to center themselves in their body and start tuning into the sensory level. For people who do use breathing, it becomes not following the air or just the movement, but start tuning into the rich kaleidoscope flow of sensations that arise and pass, that occur as we take a breath. As we breathe in, as we bring it out, there's actually dozens of sensations that come into play that ripple through. And so begin to rest the attention in the parts of the body where we experience breathing and feel the four elements is a part of this centering, focusing, concentrating way of cultivating a heightened sense of awareness. So in conclusion, I'd like to say that what we're seeing in these 13 exercises, now we've gone through 5 of them, is a progression from what's supposed to be more obvious and available to us, paying attention to that, and then start, as we get more calm and centered, to progressively begin looking deeper and deeper into ourselves, to what's more intimate and connected. And here we've now seen into the sensate level of our life. And next week we'll take little bit of a detour from this route to look at the sixth exercise, which has to do with death, and how a certain particular contemplation of death can be in the service of developing a heightened awareness, this heightened, free, clear awareness that that we're looking for in this mindfulness tradition. Okay? So, thank you.